One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Jason Markusoff, frequent Canada Land face palmer, first time Canada Land guest, and Alberta correspondent for Maclean's magazine. Welcome to Canada Land Shortcuts.
Should I keep my hand from my face the whole time or not? I guess that'll depend on how this goes.
Yeah, just make sure I earn it. Nothing gratuitous. We're going to talk today about the Rebels Nazi problem. We are going to talk about the...
Which one?
When you have to ask, you know you have more than one problem. We're going to talk about the crackdown on Atlantic journalists, and we're going to talk about the coming refugee spring. Good to have you here. This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Nicole Mercer, Travis, Kelly Trout, Alim Jiwa, Sarah Huko, Chelsea Rooney, Todd Sarodiak, and Shazlin Rahman. Shazlin, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because in an age where demagogues like Trump can manipulate mainstream media to function as in an echo chamber for his ideas, I find myself turning more and more to you for the critical analysis and perspectives that are largely missing from our media landscape.
Jason, this episode's also brought to us by FreshBooks. You are one of the last gainfully employed staff journalists in the country, so this is just like some foreign language to you to talk about invoicing and billing and accounting solution for freelancers and small businesses, huh?
Every time I do a Word, Microsoft Word document, I think, boy, if I had to have a better way, I hope there's a better way out there.
Well, my friend, if you hadn't heard of it before, there is a better way out there. If you're using Microsoft Word for your invoices, I know it gets the job done, I suppose. And when you're just trying to get your freelance practice going and make as much money as possible, that can seem like the smart decision. But at a certain point, you got to treat yourself like a professional and understand a few things. One, your time is money. And the time that you spend creating those invoices, but more than that, the time that you spend waiting to get paid and hounding them to get paid is time away from your freelance practice or your small business. FreshBooks has looked into this. They know the data. You get paid quicker when you send professional FreshBooks invoices. You also can track your invoice and see when the person who owes you money has looked at your invoice. You can get a sense of which clients pay you at what rate, and you can get paid immediately through credit card payments. It is very easy to use, stupid simple to use. It is a dream come true come tax time. That is another huge time savings for freelancers and small businesses, because compiling the information you need to do your own taxes or send it to your accountant, that's just like a quick chore when you use FreshBooks. Why listen to me go on and on and on when you can just see it for yourself? It's very visual. Go to FreshBooks.com/CanadaLand and try it out for free for 30 days, no credit card required. If you do become a customer, tell them that Canada Land sent you. You'll be doing us a favor. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction, and build hope. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's amazing the things that we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of getting help. Anybody who's actually gotten help knows that the process of getting things off your chest, of taking your stressors, your problems, and just like not letting them be bottled up, working through just conveying them to somebody, half of the battle is just doing that. You unburden yourself. And you know what? If you have a real mental health professional, no, they don't have magic bullets or magic words that make it all go away. But often they can help you see things a little bit differently and guide you to strategies or tools or to a new perspective that actually does help. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Because you listen to this podcast, you get 10% off of your first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. Want to talk about the Rebel?
I guess.
Where to begin this lurid tale, Jason? Our friend Ezra is having some problems. The Ides of March. It's been a tough couple of weeks for Ezra Levant. It's like he created some monsters. He's got some personalities there. He's got Lauren Southern, who is, doing this Canadian Ann Coulter thing. He's got Gavin McInnes, Vice Magazine founder, inventor of hipsters, according to him, turned right-winger. And they command larger social media followings than he does. They have contributed to the Rebel's surging success. But both of them have become problems in recent weeks. The first thing that we heard was while the Rebel was off in Israel, Ezra and Gavin and a lot of their other people were off on this trip. They had crowdfunded money to go and report from Israel. Lauren Southern was conspicuously absent from that trip. And I think it was while they were gone that she announced the following.
I'm going independent. Woo! So, yeah. Rebel and I are going our separate ways. Now, I had a great time at Rebel. I got to travel the world. I got to report on crazy things like the refugee crisis and Jordan B. Peterson's fight for free speech on campuses, the DC riots. I got to do so much crazy stuff. You know, I can't get into too much detail about what went down at Rebel, but I do wish them the best of luck on their future endeavors, and I hope they make awesome videos. I want my opinions to be totally unfiltered, and I want all of my stories to be something that I go and pursue.
Jason, she wanted her stories to be unfiltered.
A lot to unpack there. One of the fascinating, so I did a lot of research on The Rebel for a big feature in McLean's in January, and I blew my brains out watching way, way too much Lauren Southern and Gavin McInnes and other Rebel actors in December. So I'm sadly well-versed in how little filter they have. I mean, one of the pieces I remember from, I think it was late November, was Lauren Southern's The Week in Refugees, Murder, Rape, and Death.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the sort of thing that they're doing. So she felt filtered and restrained when she was allowed to do that. Oh my goodness, what does she want to do in her free world?
Yeah, I mean, of course she has. She tosses around the epithet faggot towards anti-fascist protesters that she doesn't like. She does that as a rebel commentator. What is she being? What is she being censored? What is she, what kind of views does Lauren Southern have that she cannot express as a rebel commentator? There might be a hint to that in an interview that she gave earlier before her departure from the Rebel. I'll play you a little bit of that.
Even the Richard Spencers of the world, like they're kind of misrepresented as well. Like Richard Spencer is not a white supremacist. He is a white nationalist. He believes in a white ethnostate. He doesn't believe in whites being superior. So,
thank you for clearing that up. He believes in a white ethnostate, not that whites are superior, but alt-fascist, new fascist, Nazi, neo-Nazi Richard Spencer believes in just a white ethnostate. Thank you for clearing that up, Lauren Southern. She has done some other messaging that is sympathetic to this white nationalist cause. And the immediate speculation, and not my speculation, but from Lauren Southern's fans, not even speculation, the assertion that you read in the comments to her announcement that she was going independent, is that this is about her Jew boss. And her Jew boss, Ezra Levant, was the one filtering her and not letting her name the Jew. That is the neo-Nazi terminology for the suppression that we Jewish overlords of the media exert. You can't name the Jew as long as we're running things. Now she's independent and she has a massive following. Immediately within that video about her going independent, she talks about her own Patreon to come. She will do very well. She'll make a lot of money, but she's going to go, the speculation, the hopes of thousands are that she's going to go full 1488, which is a Nazi code terminology that I'm not even going to bother to explain, but it's code for that she's going to go full Nazi. And that was something that Ezra couldn't tolerate. We don't know this. Ezra denies it. They wish each other well. That was what was happening in down that dark rabbit hole. And just as that was kicking around, this happened.
Me, I'm becoming anti-Semitic, like at the Holocaust Museum. This is basically a brainwashing trip. I mean, I think the Israeli government paid for this. God, they're so obsessed with the Holocaust. And yes, I know it was bad, but it's a Jewish thing to sort of dwell on the past. Holodomor was Ukrainians. I think it was 10 million Ukrainians that were killed. That was by Jews. That was by Marxist, Stalinist, left-wing, commie, socialist Jews. Well, wasn't the Treaty of Versailles, wasn't that disproportionately influenced by Jewish intellectuals?
What we heard there, Jason, was Gavin McInnes. And Gavin does like one show a week for The Rebel, but he does four shows a week. Like he does 4 hours, an hour a day, Monday to Thursday, for this paywalled right-wing compound media site. And during his stay in Israel, he went on this long rant about how his trip to Israel was in fact making him an anti-Semite. He later claimed when that 4 minutes where he says the most disgusting, factually incorrect, classic Hitler era anti-Semitism, Jews are responsible for the Treaty of Versailles. I mean, this stuff is just like...
It's straight up Mel Gibson. The Jews are responsible for the world's wars.
Yeah, it is the seductive whisper of anti-Semitism throughout the ages that seems to still have currency. And here is Gavin McInnes just spouting off all of it in this 4 minute clip. And while he was flying back from Israel to Toronto, he received big high fives from David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the KKK, and Richard Spencer. And again, the really overwhelming message from Gavin's fans was he's finally named the Jew. Good for Gavin. He's seen the light. He's finally named the Jew. When he lands, he sees that he is now the Nazis' new hero, and he quickly throws up a frantically backpedaling video.
I was on the plane. I had a Justine Sacco moment, apparently. I landed here. It was, remember, wait till she lands, and she said, I'm going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. No offense, Nazis. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I don't like you. I like Jews. And it was my first day on this fact-finding mission, not funded by the Israeli government, by the way, funded by contributors to Rebel Media. Can you just talk about what the Nazis say and refute their points? Their points are the Treaty of Versailles was done by Jews. It wasn't. Holodomor was made by Jews. It wasn't. That was Stalin, the ex-Christian atheist.
through his tweets to David Duke and Richard Spencer and in this video, no, the Jews are not responsible for this Ukrainian mass killing. No, the Jews are not responsible for the Treaty of Versailles. No, the Israeli government did not pay for the rebels' trip to Israel, as I said in that video. And furthermore, that video was all taken out of context. Our own Jonathan Goldsby, our editor here at Canada Land, I should give him danger pay for this.
Yes.
He went to see if, in fact, like, was it taken out of context? In order to find out about that, we had to actually pay Compound Media for a $7.695 access through their paywall. Sorry about that. And then Jonathan had to wade through, as you did when you were writing about the rebel, he had to wade through all of this material. And in context, it's much worse. Gavin calls Palestinians Rottweilers that need to be punched in the face. He says virulently racist things about Asians. He has another video that he ends by saying, Jews are ruining the world with their lies and their money and their hook-nosed bagel-eating faces. All of this has a slight tinge of ironic ha-ha-ha for, you know, exculpatory purposes later on down the road. But there really is no other way to interpret these charges that Gavin has made. He is contemplating openly and asserting factually incorrect, virulently racist, anti-Semitic tropes. So that leaves Ezra in a bit of a pickle, doesn't it?
Yeah. Ezra Levant, he is a proud Jew. He's a proud Zionist. He took the rebel crew minus Lauren Southern to Israel, I thought at least, because they were courting maybe pro-Zionist Jewish followers to the rebel, trying to expand his market, maybe trying to get some more donations from people who really believe that Israel, you know, has a, you know, a right to exist and a right to expand over the occupied territories. I thought that's where he was going with this. But, you know, in watching some of the rebel materials from there, it was not as much pro-Jewish, pro-Zionist as it all was, in their usual trope, profoundly anti-Muslim. They have this really weird thing going on, and this is what Lauren Southern had this, Faith Goldie had this, and now Gavin McInnes has it, where they actually fantasize or idealize the Crusades. They were in Bethlehem moaning about how, Faith Goldie was moaning about how the Muslim call to prayer is ringing over the birthplace of Jesus. Well, the city has a Christian mayor, and after she tweeted that, it was hilarious to see all the response from both Christians and Muslims saying, there's no problem here, and we don't need crusades to come and take over and expel the Muslims again. That's not necessary. The rebels going in very dangerous territory. I love the headline that the Beaverton had. Ezra Levant confident that riled up far-right mob won't turn against the Jews this time.
Well, that really is at the crux of it. That was a brilliant summary from the Beaverton, really. I mean, and I think it speaks to, like, look, this is like a disgusting story about, I think, disgusting people. And a lot of people are just turned off and they don't want to know all the dramatic twists and turns of their falling out. There is a greater relevance here and why I you know, continue to focus on them, because I think this is like a battle for where conservatism is going to go in Canada. Ezra Levant is trying to assert a certain kind of conservatism that is pro-oil, pro-Israel, and profoundly anti-Muslim. And that is a shtick that I think he has done well with throughout the years in various forms. Earlier on, when he was more of a mainstream conservative figure, it was more about the pro-oil thing. He was a lobbyist for oil. He wrote a book about ethical oil. He gets paid to speak at oil industry events. There may be other funding we don't know about because the rebels' funding is just completely mysterious. It's totally secret, unlike our own organization. We have no idea who's funding the rebel. But that's where a lot of the money came from, the oil industry. And it's, you know, he also was a hardliner, hawkish, pro-Israel, and pro-Israel in a very hawkish conservative way. He is asserting that that is where conservatism should stand. He doesn't have to worry about me, about Canada Land's critique. And the people who hate him have always hated him, and they just hate him more. He has to worry about his own people because he wants to have his hate and eat it too. You know, I'm not sure, as I delve into the sewer of the comment section, that they are with him on this pro-Israel thing, because this current alt-right movement is profoundly against American influence and American money going into other parts of the world. It's got a big strain of anti-Semitism in it, period, and it's very isolationist. So if he builds these personalities up bigger than himself and loses them, I don't know what that does to the rebel. And I also don't know what it does to the rebel if he keeps Gavin, which is what he's trying to do. He's essentially overlooking Gavin's Nazi-supporting spew. and saying maybe that was just a joke. All I know is that his stuff for us doesn't have that stuff in it to the same extent. And he's clarified that he's pro-Israel and pro-Jew. So I wonder what's going on within that organization.
In the States, which is an increasingly large part of the Rebels' viewership base, they're really trying to, you know, horn in on the Breitbart audience, the Gateway Pundit audience, the real alt-right audience that's in the States. Gavin McInnes is bigger than him. Lawrence Southern is bigger than him. And that I think you're right, is a problem for Ezra Levant. And he prides himself on having a very light editing touch on certain things. In fact, I went for my story behind the paywall of Ezra's channel. They have some special TV shows, including Gavin McInnes's. And in November, he had on Richard Spencer, the alt-right, white nationalist, white supremacist, whatever Lawrence Southern wants to call him. He was asking, and in the middle of this show, McInnes asks, "I work for a Jew named Ezra Levant. How much does that make your blood boil?" And Spencer, if you ever watch him, he has a kind of cool demeanor. He says, "It doesn't make my blood boil at all. The fact he's a Jew, he's a neoconservative, as I understand. The fact he has you on, you're kind of pushing things in our own direction, in your own way. The fact I'm on here and we can respectfully talk. That's great." And I put that to Ezra because I had a few interviews with him for my story. And Ezra said, "I didn't watch it. And you know what? I trust Gavin. I give him wide latitude to say what he wants. And I know that he's not racist." And, you know, and lo and behold, a couple days after, Gavin McInnes is, I am in fact not against Jews and I don't believe the blood libels, Gavin McInnes goes on again and has a video on the Ezra channel, 10 Things I Hate About Jews, which I guess was kind of meant to be a pun on the 10 Things I Hate About You movie title. And it was a critique of things that bug him about what Israel's like, this weird drunken rant. But I'm amazed that Ezra condones that stuff. He seems to be in this mentality where if he apologizes, if he backs down, he is weak. He is bowing to the sensitive coddlers, the safe spacers, the alt-left, the mainstream media. So he's in a place where he feels like he cannot back down, which is dangerous when people get that close to, you know, blatant Nazism.
Well, you know, you're right. They don't ever apologize. I don't think that they ever correct anything, or when they do change their material, they change it without explanation. The old stuff disappears and you have no idea that they were ever wrong. In the case of 10 Things I Hate About Jews, it's been changed to 10 Things I Hate About Israel. That is a very – I don't even know of a precedent for that with the Rebel video. So there is some – there's something going on there. Look, I don't care. Like, you know, wrestle not with assholes lest you become an asshole. Like, I found myself yesterday as I was getting into this rabbit hole with this stuff, I got tweeted at by David Duke, the former – he like addressed me by name. "Jesse, it's a historical fact that Jews are responsible for millions of Ukraine." I'm like, am I going to tweet back – like, "David, wait, you're KKK's grand wizard. I'm not talking to you." You know, really, like, what we're getting at here, like, I don't want to have to correct every idiot who believes every conspiracy theory, and then my refusal to correct them is like, well, you're unwilling to argue with them on the facts. What this is about is, like, will the standard hold? The standard, I think it's a pretty reasonable one, has been, if you're a Nazi, you can't take money from Jewish groups or call yourself a Zionist if you publish Nazis. That's, you know, there's like a line there. You don't want to stand next to a Nazi, that we don't accept in polite conversation or civil discourse Nazis. Ezra's done well in getting people out to rallies, a lot of it for people who are against carbon taxes, some people who are really riled up about sex education. Will, this is the standard that I'm curious about. My own standards of this are pretty well defined and not really interesting to the conservatives of Canada. What I want to know is, will the people who stand with the rebel stand with the rebel and Gavin McInnes?
That's to assume that there's one audience, Jesse, and there's not. There are multiple audiences for the rebel, and he's been very good at finding these niches out there. He pretty much corners in mainstream media the loud and firm anti-Muslim, pro-Islamophobia market. That's his. He has the lock her up market in Alberta against Notley. The market's a bit more split up with conservative anti-Trudeauism, but he also seems to want this pro-crusade alt-right market, or at least it's one thing that some of his big celebrities in his
in his wheelhouse, Gavin McInnes, and now the former, now the gone Lauren Southern, you know, that they're developing. So that's a market. That's, you know, for him, that's revenue. Like you, like any media organization right now, he's thinking about eyeballs. He's thinking about market. He's thinking about revenue. And, you know, there's a cold dollars and cents thing to this for him. If he can still hang on to that amount, that group, without totally sacrificing everything that he believes in, if he just provides this free speech platform, then he might stick with it. He doesn't seem to want to apologize for things. And I don't know if we'll see him do that now.
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right. And I think it's more than just about clicks and traffic. He's building a political machine. And right now, what gets asses in seats, you can have little bits of micro-targeting with the carbon tax, this, and anti-Islam, you know, maybe anti-Islam is a bigger ticket. But the alt-right is, that's the stadium show. And he wants those clicks. He wants those people. He wants those votes for politicians to show up to his rallies. He wants that energy really badly. But he's Jewish, and I don't know that they want him.
There was a point when the rebels started, before Gavin McInnes, before Lauren Southern, before they started getting into this this weird dark territory, that there was something that was off-brand for Ezra. Michael Corrin, who actually just wrote a brilliant piece in The Walrus, the former Sun News host, wrote a piece in The Walrus about this whole Ezra Levant, Gavin McInnes anti-Semitism problem. He was an early, he was a day one worker for Ezra. He was signed up to do some things. But when he wrote a piece in the National Post in defense of Kathleen Wynne's sex ed policy against some of the haters, enough of those haters wrote back angrily to Ezra Levant saying, this is a problem. Why would you have this guy on your show if he's going to be against, you know, for Kathleen Wynne's sex ed thing, that Michael Corrin was summarily dismissed. Ezra said, sorry, you're off brand. You're not really where we want to be. So if enough complaints come in, Ezra may indeed back off. I wonder if this could say two things. One is that there aren't enough people complaining about what Gavin McInnes is doing from the Ezra fans to make him move. Or two, he's gotten to this dark place where Ezra doesn't care what anybody says. He's not going to change his lineup for anybody's purpose.
That is a really good point, Jason. That's such a good point that it is possible for all of Ezra's talk about, I trust these people. I don't have to agree with them. I have a light touch on editing. He got rid of Corrin very quickly when Michael Corrin said that the sex education was no big deal. But Ezra knows that the resistance to the Kathleen Wynne sex ed program, that was a big moneymaker and rallying cry for the rebel. And if you fuck with that, if you fuck with the hot button issues that bring people out for the rebel and result in donations to the rebel, you are kicked off the team. But apparently Gavin's tirades don't qualify.
Well, and you know, the thing that he's courting is America. Look, anti-Notleyism, anti, you know, Motion M103 is Canadian, and that's a great market. And he's cornering the market on that sort of stuff in Canada. But there are so many more eyeballs in the States and overseas in Europe for Euro nationalism, for white nationalism, for anti-immigrant sentiment. Gavin McInnes is not a very popular figure in Canada. He's not very well known outside of, you know, some of the hardcore rebel base. But there's this big, great group that, you know, in the States that loves him, that loves Lauren Southern. And Ezra's has been, you know, trying to court that market. And as long as the people who love him because he hates Notley don't get turned off sufficiently because some people on there get a bit too Nazi for their liking, then Ezra's fine.
Okay, Jason, I want to talk about a couple of stories. You know, we're talking a lot about the state of journalism in Atlantic Canada, and just last week or two, there's a couple of incidents. Justin Brake, who is an editor for The Independent in Newfoundland, he's been on the show before after he was present during this actually really remarkable protest where three or four, I think, different Indigenous communities out in Newfoundland and Labrador came together to occupy this Muskrat Falls energy project. And the occupation itself was an interesting, it was a fascinating story where when they occupied the project, it was nonviolent and there was actually a lot of interesting exchange between the energy workers and the protesters. And Justin Brake was the one journalist who accompanied the protesters on their occupation. He spoke about that on this program. We broke the news that he is now facing criminal charges for trespassing in covering that. And I just want to say, like, we just wouldn't have that story. And it's not just that it was an interesting story, that the protest was an interesting story that brought together all these different people. It had an impact. There were renegotiations of the terms of that project because of that occupation. It's absolutely a news story of first order that the public needs to know about. So essentially what is being decided in whether or not Justin Brake is considered a criminal for that is whether we're going to allow journalists to cover these kinds of stories, whether the public has a right to know. There is another side to it. You could say, well, what special rights does a journalist have to trespass, right? You could argue that. I'm sure there are people out there, people who did when we had that first show out there. And that gets us to this question of, well, what is a journalist in the eyes of the law?
And this is exactly what the Nalcor lawyer, boy, I can't believe you're sounding exactly like a corporate lawyer, Jesse. Go figure. No, the lawyer in court just this week said the journalists have no greater right to trespass on private property than any other individual. And a journalist certainly has no greater right to defy a court order than any other individual. So they're taking that tack. You know, it's not a tack I'm familiar with any other institution or entity stating. I mean, journalists are afforded a certain level of protection in Canada and in U.S. There's an important place for bearing witness in Canada, is there not?
Yes, and I think in the past, the reason why we haven't seen stories like this is not because journalists actually have any formalized special status in the law, but I think that was just common practice, is that if a newspaper reporter or a CBC reporter was present at a protest, they would be immune from whatever legal consequences the protesters had. Justin Brake is the editor of an online independent, it's called The Independent, and I think that if he was a CBC reporter, this would not be happening. So I think that's an aspect of this as well. I get the other side's point of view. I guess anybody could have called themselves a journalist to get off the hook, is the slippery slope argument. But it's just not true in the case of Justin Brake. He was not there as an activist. He was not using journalist as some sort of magic force field. He was covering this, and it was consequential, and he was doing a public service in doing that. Speaking of CBC journalists, it comes in a different form when people want to crack down on CBC journalists. Jacques Poitras, who's been on the show before talking about the Irving family. So, you know, Jacques, for the CBC, like, the CBC is all you have in New Brunswick to provide just accountability. Forget about criticism, just accountability for the Irving family, which, like, owns that province. The rest of the media is owned by the Irving family. So Jacques wrote the book, literally, on the Irvings, and he continues to cover them. I think his colleagues also write about the Irvings for the CBC. And he tweeted that the result of a complaint to the CBC ombudsman, Esther Enkin, William McDowell is a big-time defamation lawyer. He was on the show talking about the Furlong case with me. William McDowell is like, if you have limitless resources and want to protect your good name and through whatever, like, he is the defamation guy in this country. And, you know, you have to really pay attention when you get a angry letter from him, as the CBC did. He's representing the Irvings, who basically want Jacques Poitras to be forbidden to cover the Irvings. That is what they've asked for. They asked for his Twitter account to be shut down and for him to be taken off the beat. And that is, like, a big part of his job. So, like, they're kind of saying, like, they want his job. Why do the Irvings want to silence Jacques Poitras? If you look at the complaint, they're saying that he has two Twitter accounts, one for his book reporting, and they say that he's in conflict of interest because he's trying to sell his book. And they say he's in conflict of interest because he's in conflict, rather, of the CBC's journalistic standards and practices, because he was disrespectful. He was disrespectful to the Irving family. He's disrespectful to billionaires. And they cite a tweet where somebody refers to the Telegraph Journal as the TU. And Jacques says, well, what's the TU? And this person says, oh, that's the Telegraph urinal. And in engaging in that exchange with this person who, not Jacques, this other person who was calling it the Telegraph urinal, he displayed disrespect to the Irvings. And to that one, I just feel like, who the fuck do they think they are? Like, they don't like his disrespectful tone and they don't want him to recover them anymore. Like, what century and what country do they think they're in?
And they're also kvetching about his opinions, that the opinions he was expressing. And the one piece cited in the ombuds letter was this one section from his book, which basically argues provocatively that the Irving family is, or the Irving Corporation is, very influential and powerful in New Brunswick. And as CBC's ombuds letter points out, that's a fact. That's an interpretation based on fact. If they don't want facts pointed out to them, then they should just maybe buy every single media organization, including the CBC, in New Brunswick, and then they can control everything. But until that happens, you have to accept the fact, Irving family, that there are people with facts and interpretations that you may not 100% agree with.
Jason, now is the time on this program, as you are aware, where we note duly things that must be duly noted. Would you care to go first?
Sure. A couple, two quick things. One is there was this, I don't normally watch Fox News except when I'm at my parents' house, and I saw this tweeted around yesterday.
Okay.
From the good show, Trump's favorite Fox show, which is Fox and Friends, their morning show. It was blasted out from one of their morning couch anchors. Media bias on full display. Newspapers now cashing in on T-shirts splashed with anti-Trump rhetoric. What are those anti-Trump slogans she was taking aim at? Washington Post's, democracy dies in darkness. Chicago Tribune's, speaking truth to power since 1947. And LA Times, journalism matters. Those are pro-journalism. I don't know if they're anti-Trump exactly. So,
I got to push back. I think if you're pro-journalism and pro-fact, you are de facto anti-Trump. That is an yay, Fox and Friends, you hit the nail on the head. If you are selling T-shirts that are in support of truth, that is a partisan anti-Trump commercialization attempt.
Well, I guess you can look at it that way, but it freaks me out that people become so propagandistically enthralled with their choice for leader that people presenting straight facts and hard analysis critical of him is anti-Trump, that pro-journalism comes anti. I mean, there's just this anti-journalism wave going along on the right now, and you see this with Breitbart, you see it with Rebel, and now you're seeing it with a lot of people on Fox News. Like Sean Hannity was saying that if anybody would ask questions about this plagiarizing former national security advisor, they should just go straight to hell. Like, this is a guy who's now, you know, his lack of curiosity extends to telling other journalists who ask questions to go to hell. I want to quickly also note, and I don't think this should go without saying it on this show, is the pain and cuts that are coming at the Vancouver Sun and Vancouver Province, which
sure.
Post Media smushed together. They had a bunch of voluntary buyouts earlier this year, and now they're getting 29 new newsroom layoffs. So that's in total 48 people being cut from a newsroom. So basically almost half the size it used to be before these cuts. And as bad as these are, I'm just really, nothing they do isn't in the shadow of the Paul Godfrey board retention bonuses. And I mean, obviously the product is going to be degraded. Every product is degraded when there are layoffs and the staff gets smaller. But I don't think that Godfrey is aware enough about the damage he did to his company's own brand by taking these buyouts. Like, the ROI on that for the company is probably crap.
Vancouver is in atrocious shape for news coverage. You know, I just don't know that the optics that you're pointing out are something that Godfrey cares about. All indications are that he doesn't. I mean, he seriously dissed his own papers in that Toronto Life Q&A. On the one hand, he was just being honest. He was asked, like, they're a lot crappier than they used to be, aren't they? And he said, yeah, but they're not yet unacceptable, which is a wonderful rallying cry for the surviving posties. Duly noted. Jason, I'm just going to briefly give a tip of the hat to the CBC for continuing to do some really important investigative work for consumer advocacy in their reporting on the banks, and TD in particular, but it's now been extended to the other major banks in Canada. They're ripping people off. They are exploiting their own workers and forcing their workers to lie and upsell people, and sometimes not even upsell them, just secretly add on services and plans to their bank accounts to get their service fees higher and hope that they just don't notice. I think that this is just, like, in the most basic direct sense, proving your worth, like even in a dollars and cents way. When they do this stuff on what kind of chicken you're eating, when they do the stuff on bank fees you shouldn't be paying, they are proving the worth of journalism in a really tangible way. That this is like the kind of case we need to be making. This is the kind of work we need to be doing to remind people why we're important and what value we have. So word up to them.
Duly noted.
Hey, quick note to listeners in Abbotsford or students at the University of Fraser Valley, or if you live in Vancouver and don't mind a little drive, The Imposter is coming to you this Saturday. Our own arts and culture show, Aaliyah Pabani and Kevin Sexton, are coming to Abbotsford. It's a free show this Saturday. It is at UFV Abbotsford Building B, room 101, 33844 King Road. That is this Saturday, 7 p.m., free live show from The Imposter. Check it out. So, Jason, we're going to talk about refugee crossings into Canada, a topic that is always controversy-free on this program. It always goes splendidly well. It may go a little bit better this time because you've reported on this extensively. Here's what I want to talk about, because we talk about the reporting of things and the optics of things on this show. I've focused in the past on how disingenuous and misinterpreted Justin Trudeau's tweet was after the first Trump Muslim ban was announced, and he tweeted that, you know, refugees will always be welcome in Canada, welcome refugees, which was taken as a direct response to the Trump initiative and was even misreported by PBS and others to say that Canada would be accepting those who were now going to be rejected by Trump. And in fact, nothing really changed in Canada's refugee policy whatsoever. I was very critical of the media's response to that and Trudeau, I think, basically spinning the media. You pointed out in your most recent piece on this, you've been a series of pieces on what's been happening at our border. You focused on a different group who read that tweet from Justin Trudeau and may have been misled by it. And that is the refugees themselves.
And people who are illegal immigrants worried about deportation in America. I was speaking to somebody who works with refugees and immigrants in Vancouver, who's from Central America, and he was quite surprised by how many people he's heard about from the Spanish language community who've read Spanish language press and saw Justin Trudeau's tweet and interpreted that as, oh my God, he's going to make us safe. The perception issue in the States is almost bigger in some ways than the actual laws that Trump is executing, saying that you can't bring in certain people from certain countries and that he's going to deport everybody. It's a sense from Trump and his administration that people are not wanted, that America is not safe for newcomers. It's not welcoming anymore. You may as well rub off that inscription on the base of the Statue of Liberty. Trudeau wanted to sort of portray himself as the anti-Trump with his message, but the perception that he brought with that was sort of the mirror opposite of what Trump did, and that will make people feel good in Canada who welcome refugees themselves, but also it sends a signal, and I think this is what some more immigration conservative types thought, was that he's really saying misleadingly that we're opening the doors wide and we will take everybody.
It's interesting. I mean, this has always been the story with vulnerable people going way back. They have to read the tea leaves. It's not about some broken telephone thing. It's that you want to get ahead of the game. So, you know, when Jews were fleeing the Holocaust and it was spreading across Europe, you wouldn't wait for the law that would put you on a train towards a death camp. You would try to read the tea leaves and read the symbols and look at the optics and say, is the noose tightening? Is it time finally to pack up my family and do a very dangerous thing and go to some country I've never been before where our future is uncertain? And people, families have to make that judgment call based on optics, based on the signaling from a government. So they're getting negative signaling from Trump that, like, it's getting worse and worse, and eventually it's going to catch up with us, whether you're a refugee seeking a refugee status or whether you're one of the millions of illegal immigrants in America. Why wait? And now you've got Canada signaling something very different. So there's consequences. You know, the optics, like you say, are maybe more important than the policies.
Which is what makes it interesting to look at what people have been saying since from Trudeau's government. We keep looking to what Ahmed Hussein, the immigration minister, who himself is a Somali refugee. We look at what Public Safety Minister Ralph Goodale have said. And they've been very, very careful on this one. While they haven't said, we don't want people, we're not welcoming people, they're not saying, we welcome all refugees. They're saying, we have a system. If people come in this way, they will be processed, they will be given due process, because that is our legal system. They're being very, not circumspect or not welcoming, they're just trying to toe the line, being very careful, because they realize the impact of these words. I don't know if they exactly want to walk back what Trudeau said, but they're certainly not repeating it. On the other side, it's interesting what the conservatives say. I was talking to Jason Kenney, who was immigration minister, you know, last decade when there was a surge of border crossers coming and a lot of people from the Roma community, in some cases in smuggling, in proper organized smuggling rings. He's very aware that signaling matters too. And remember that refugee health benefit curtailing thing that came across a couple years ago? That was actually designed in some ways to send negative signals. He didn't want people to feel like they could just come in and access Canada's health benefits, access the process, and get their way in.
It was a scarecrow. It was an angry signal. It was also a signal to Canadians who are always saying, oh, refugees get treated better than Canadians. I don't think there's any factual basis for that. But that was, I think, a conservative messaging that certainly not people.
No, but I think he did want to remind people that if you don't get approved by the Immigration Refugee Board, you get deported, which is the same thing that happens now. It's just a matter of what messages you'd rather portray and what signals you want to send both to refugees and claimants themselves or the Canadian public. Trudeau was not necessarily signaling to asylum seekers. He didn't mean to signal to asylum seekers when he sent out that tweet back in January. He was signaling that to Canadians. I don't think he quite appreciated how much asylum seekers would get that message.
Well, they have gotten it, and these stories and these photos that have popped up over the winter, people on both sides have been saying, just wait till spring, that whatever we've been seeing, if people are willing to risk and lose their fingers, their health, risk their lives and lives of their children to cross these borders in the dead of winter in Manitoba, what's going to happen come spring? And there's a tremendous pressure from both sides. The Conservatives are saying just shut it down, basically, and force people through the actual checkpoints where this treaty will basically mean that if they're coming through the States and claiming refugee status, they're just we won't even entertain that, is my understanding. And then on the other side, the NDP is saying, no, let's formalize the process by which we will entertain refugee claims from people who have first tried to get refugee status in the United States. That's my understanding of the pressure from either side. And through your reporting, my understanding is the Liberals are basically ignoring pressure from either direction and just hoping to kind of maintain the status quo. If I've got that right, and correct me if I don't, is that going to be possible if we see a massive uptick in refugee claims this spring?
Right now, they're sort of playing it at maintenance levels, right? The numbers that are coming in, while they're vastly greater than the numbers who've crossed through irregular means, through ditches, through farmers' fields in Manitoba, through a provincial park in BC, these numbers are much, much higher than they have been in past winters and even past summers, the last couple of weeks. But it's not overburdening the refugee system entirely. We have a whole bigger asylum-seeking system, people who fly in from China and claim refugee status once they get here. That's allowed, unlike the Safe Third Country Agreement, which bans people from doing that at the land crossings in America. So overall, our numbers are not at levels where they can't handle it. If enough people, if the dozens on a weekend become hundreds on a weekend coming in to Manitoba and Quebec, then they might have to change for two reasons. One, just logistically, they can't process people at that rate. And two, I think people start to say, and we already see this on both sides of it, that this is ridiculous, that this system just is not respectful of the fact that we have borders, that we have a refugee system. Either we should let people in an orderly fashion at the border post we've set up, or we just shut it down entirely, and that's the NDP or the immigration reformist perspective and the conservative perspective. My sense is that if the numbers really do surge in the spring, as they traditionally do, then the Liberals are going to have to force to one side or the other.
Jason, thank you.
That got dark, didn't it?
You wanted it darker. That's your Canada Land Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com, and I will read what you send me, and I will respond to you when I can. We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. Jason, where can people find you?
@Markasoff.
Our website is CanadaLandShow.com. Our crowdfunding site is Patreon.com/CanadaLand. I make this show with Russell Gragg. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to CanadaLand.com/join. And thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.